We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Hello, and welcome to Who's Counting, the podcast about all things elections, election integrity, how elections are supposed to run, how sometimes they aren't run the way they're supposed to. I'm Cleta Mitchell. I'm the host of Who's Counting. And I hope that you'll visit our website, www.whoscounting.us, so that you can get resources and up-to-date information about news related to election integrity activities all over the country, as well as our citizen's guide to building election integrity infrastructures at the local and state levels all over America. We're very excited today to have my guest, a good friend of mine and a real leader in the election integrity efforts nationwide, and that is Representative Seth Groh from Pennsylvania. And Seth, welcome to Who's Counting. We're so happy you could be with us today.
Good to be here, and we got to watch Who's Counting. So great title for a podcast.
That's right.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Seth, let's start with, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, your background, how you came into the state legislature in Pennsylvania, where you're from, and just introduce yourself to our guests, to our audience.
So I'm from South Central Pennsylvania, York County. It is actually the first capital of the United States under the Articles of Confederation. So we have First Capital Bank. We have the First Capital Pub. Our History Center is just building a whole new wing supporting the Articles of Confederation. Or hop, skip, and a jump from Philadelphia and Baltimore. And from a sports fan perspective, it's very unique here in New York because we're west of the Susquehanna, but we're still kind of eastern Pennsylvania if you shoot it in half. So we got a lot of Steelers fans, we got a lot of Eagles fans, and we got a lot of Ravens fans because we're so close to Baltimore. And when Baltimore was jacking up their taxes, everybody wanted a taste of freedom from the Socialist Republic of Maryland. So they came up to Southern Pennsylvania. Actually, former Governor Ehrlich from Maryland, his mom lives in Southern York County. And when he comes up to visit, he thinks, oh, I'm just going to be a dude in Southern York County. No one's going to know me. I'm in a different state, but it's like a little Baltimore down there. So he's like, oh, Governor Ehrlich, good to see you. So it's kind of a cool place, great family values, great conservative area. Really, really honored to have been born and raised here. Went to school locally, actually enlisted in the Navy when I was in high school, but I had open heart surgery when I was in seventh grade, so I couldn't fulfill the commitment. So I ended up going for poli sci because I wanted to give back to such a great country that gives us so many freedoms, and so many blessings every day. So ended up working for a legislator through college. A couple years later, my local state representative decided not to run again, threw my hat in the ring, seven others, won. And here I am a couple years later. So
That's pretty great.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's been a blessing. It's tough. It's never easy. It's nice to hear sometimes you get like good job, how to go. But normally if you're calling a government official, things aren't going your way. So you learn to try to diffuse situations and help people the best you can. Currently the chairman of the House State Government Committee, which has pretty broad oversight in the General Assembly. We deal with everything from elections. We're dealing with congressional redistricting right now. Mm-hmm. We have pensions, which is unique because our state employee retirement, our school employee retirement system's under investigation by the FBI and the SEC. So we're going to have to dive into that once those investigations are wrapped up. We have fun stuff like procurement, right to know, sunshine, ethics act. So it's pretty broad and it's pretty fun. And we've been able to lead on a lot of initiatives in Harrisburg over the past year.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you would talk about the jurisdiction of your committee. I know a lot of people might not think that those are the most interesting topics, but not to me, when you're talking about the political process, and that's a lot of what you have, but election law, that's a political process, ethics laws, that's a political process. And historically, it's been very difficult to get conservatives to be interested in those topics. And we've almost left it to the left to dominate in that field. And we're playing a lot of catch up in all of those political process areas. So good for you that, I mean, I love that stuff. To me, that's, we need to be fighting on those battlefields. So great. It's great to know that we've got a good conservative who's doing that in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and I never liked any of that stuff. I am cut my taxes, give me my guns, protect babies kind of guy. Like elections are like, because, you know, we run every 2 years. So we're all election experts because we're on the ballot every 2 years and we know everything. And in the House, you kind of like, another election, right? So, you know, I fully really appreciate all that process stuff now. Particularly, we also deal with like regulations in this committee. And, you know, between just seeing how much power the legislative bodies have given away to everybody else, because in the past, legislators are like, why deal with this? Like, let's create this other entity. They can deal with it. Let's just let the executive branch deal with it. Then all of a sudden you're sitting back and everybody else is making all the decisions that the General Assembly should be making. And you have to go get that power back from people who don't want to give up that power. So it's just viewing that. And it's been actually refreshing to have those discussions with my colleagues, because if there's bills that are put up and it's allowing an agency to do everything or anything at all, they're like, should we be allowing them? The question is, should we be allowing them to do that? Is that their role as the executive branch, or are we going too far giving up our power? Because once you give it up, it's almost impossible to get it back.
Well,
and
you know that
that's what we're seeing across the board.
Well, and that happens, I have to say, that's certainly what has happened in Congress over the last century. And it certainly happened. I was a state legislator in Oklahoma. It was exactly the same thing. And it's really hard to have oversight when the legislature has ceded that authority. And so, believe me, I've had those discussions with my colleagues when I was in the legislature. But I want to talk a little bit about, because you do have jurisdiction over elections. And so talk a little bit about were you the chairman of the state government committee on during 2020, or did you assume that role after 2020?
I assumed that role during 2020. Oh, so after the election was done, our chairman at the time, Garth Everett, very nice man, great guy. He had surgery, so he's like, I'm not coming back. And he was also retiring. So I'm done. See ya. Have a nice life.
So that was mid-term?
That was literally at the end of session right after the election. So November election happened. He's like, I'm not coming back. You guys are going to have to deal with this. So leadership came in and made me acting chairman of the state government committee after the election. So the first thing we did was actually initiate, we have what's called an audit committee, the Legislative Budget Finance. It is a bipartisan committee. It's made up of six, it's an equal number of Republicans, Democrats from the House and the Senate. They have a management committee that kind of makes determinations what they're going to take up, and it's four people, one from each caucus, two Republicans, two Democrats. So we did a resolution authorizing a full audit of the 2020 election. And we sent it to the audit committee and it was shot down on party lines 2-2. And it's over and done with. One of the problems we did have is the staff didn't want to do it either. So they really prepped the Democratic members to make arguments against it. We can't do this. And we actually put an appropriation in there to fund the cost. We're like, you can hire any outside contractor you want to facilitate this. We want a complete review, all 67 counties. And they just shot it down. After that, we really, from the House side, we don't have subpoena power in committees. And that was basically our audit committee. So we sat down and said, what else can we do? We know there's problems in our elections, even outside the 2020 general election, there's problems with how we're doing elections. How do we do a deep dive and figure out what's going on? So we turn into pumpkins on November 30th. We cease to exist. So we're a full-time General Assembly.
That is what we call sine die adjournment, right?
Yep. So we are full-time. We operate year-round. We don't have any downtime. We can call meetings, do everything, except from November 30th, or really midnight November 30th, until we get sworn in the first Monday or the first Tuesday in January. Okay. There's nothing that occurs. So before we broke, and still is my capacity as acting chairman, I authored pretty comprehensive letters to county elections directors through all 67 counties, just creating a benchmark of questions to get back to us. How did you operate? What happened? Et cetera. We sent the Department of State an extensive list of probably 4 pages of questions just on stuff before we broke. So as we broke, basically leadership said, congratulations, you're it next session. So just keep doing what you're doing. So, which was kind of cool, but at the same time, like it's been a lot of work. So we sat down, we got the letters back from the Department of State. We did some follow-up, letters with them. The counties were interesting because, they were pretty ticked at the 2020 election. So
really?
Yeah.
How so?
They hated everything about it. You know, the mail-in voting, like they just weren't happy with anything. So we got some pretty good responses. I got some pretty good phone calls as some ticked off election directors too. Pretty colorful language was flying around. But I said, listen, I get it. We have problems. Help me fix it. Because we just can't go through this again. So after, you know, kind of calming them down again, it was a great partnership. So looking at the entire election system, because it's a system, right? And it's made up of little components.
That's right.
I said, we got to break this down into I can't have like a hearing on elections, right? You just can't do one hearing.
No,
it's just too big. So I'm like, let's break it down to how elections roll out, right? You start with voter registration. I go register the vote as that first thing a voter, it's your first interaction with the election system, right? You start with voter registration and you go all the way to post-election audit stuff at the end, what happens at the end. And you break each piece down piece by piece. Let's bring in the elections directors. Let's bring in the Department of State. Let's bring in election experts and election officials from across the country who seem to do it really well and don't have problems, like Ohio and Florida and other states, and ask them, what are you doing? Right. So we did that. It took us 3 months, 10 hearings, really extensive time. I think we had 54 hours of hearing time, 50, 60 testifiers and like reading documents. I mean, the prep time for each hearing was extensive. We did one every week as best we could. Sometimes there was a little bit of gap, but it was a lot of work. Through those hearings, we kicked out about 100-page report. And it was just discovery of so much. I mean, you know, voter registration, you ask, and what's nice is you're asking similar questions because there's overlapping processes throughout it. Like your voter registration, it's kind of connected with mail-in voting applications, absentee ballot. So when you bring in different people, you can ask them same questions and there's a level of comfort. We had a relaxed atmosphere. It wasn't a gotcha moment. Like we're not out there trying to get somebody for anything. We're just asking, how are you administering elections? What does our law say? How are you administering? Walk us through it. And then you start getting the relaxation of elections directors. And they were very happy to testify because nobody ever really asked them what they do and how they do it. So they were a great partnership and we learned a lot. And we learned that like we don't actually validate voter registration.
Great.
But, right? I mean,
so I could register to vote as Minnie Mouse and no one would ever know.
Right. So it's stuff like that. You're just like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, you add people to the voter registration rolls without actually validating the information. Yeah. I'm like, so what if they then apply for an absentee ballot? Oh, we allow it.
Send it to them.
Send it to them. And I'm like, and you don't check that? No, we don't check that. Then we'll send them the actual ballot. But when we get it back, we list it as an unvalidated ballot. And it's listed that then until we actually validate. I'm like, why don't you just validate their voter registration in the beginning? And it kind of simplifies the entire process. Well, we just don't have to.
We don't have to?
Don't have to. They're like, according to state law, we don't have to. So it's stuff like that we find. And that's, to me, that's the most egregious, because that's your gatekeeper. Voter registration is your gatekeeper. If you don't have a secure voter registration system, your entire election is questionable to begin with.
Well, you know what's interesting about that is I learned the hard way about in 2001, which is now 20 mm-hmm. years ago, after the Florida Bush v. Gore situation in the 2000 presidential election, I was testifying before the House Judiciary Committee about the Help America Vote Act, which is the federal bill that Congress passed, federal law that Congress passed after the 2000 election. And I was testifying. I don't even remember what I was testifying about exactly. You know, I'm an election lawyer. I can't remember the component. But what I do remember vividly is that Maxine Waters, that great intellect, mm-hmm. began attacking me when it came time for her questions about voter registration, and started basically yelling that voter registration, requiring voters to register to prove their eligibility to vote, is racist. And that was the first time that little nugget had ever entered my mind. And I was kind of looking around to see, surely this nobody else can think this is valid. But then Barney Frank chimed in. And I'm thinking, okay, so they're going to attack the administration. And they've done that for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, but they don't want validation. But you found that's a threshold requirement. That's a very interesting point. It's almost like you reverse engineered all of this.
Right. And it provided, because it's a lot of input. Again, like, I'm a House member. We run every 2 years. You think you know how elections are
That's right.
No idea. It's like deer in headlights. And right. I'm very blessed. The members of my committee love reading. They love research. They're active. They're engaged. They're passionate and cared about this topic. And they dove into it. And they dove deep into it. Like, they're like, did you see this report? Did you read this? Are you looking at this? Phenomenal. The entire team was just amazing the entire way through it.
So, what is public? Like, for instance, the letters that you sent to all of the registrars and the and their responses, is that part of the ultimate report that you prepared, and you have all of that material?
Yeah, I actually don't think we included the letters in the report, but they're on our like state government website. I have like an entire section on the election. So it's the report, okay. All the data we got and stuff like that. So it's all out there.
Great.
Yeah. And it's
so anybody who wanted to go and look at all of that could do that.
Yeah, we tried to make it as public as we possibly could. We even created, like, after a while, I'm like, why don't we just do a public portal? Like,
oh, right. Report.
So we had that, like, questions, just comment, like, have at it. Because people are very passionate about this from both sides, all perspectives. Let's let them bet and see what people are saying about this. So we did provide an opportunity for that public input as well. Because some states do that. We know, like, when we do a public hearing, we have like normally a set of testifiers. I know some states are like open for public comment, almost like a free mic, open night mic kind of thing. We really don't do that. So we did want to try to provide that. So we went through it. Department of State was actually good to work with. Their elections director, their deputy secretary for elections and commissions, Jonathan Marks, testified at like 7 of the 10 hearings. So we did have, given that relationship between the administration and the General Assembly and their manipulation of the election 2020, the whole nine yards.
Well, talk about that. Let me stop you right there. Why don't you explain to the audience what you mean by that? Because I think this is a key point about what happened in Pennsylvania in 2020.
Yeah. So the Pennsylvania story actually starts back with the 2016 election. Mm. President Trump won, and it was a shock to the world, right? I mean, you still remember, I still vividly remember the Hillary supporters crying miserably. Right. I mean, me and the rest of the delegation were like at IHOP when it, you know, it was late. And I still remember, like, they called Pennsylvania for Pat Toomey. So when you were watching the numbers, Pat Toomey and President Trump were like neck and neck the entire way. They're like, oh, Pennsylvania, Pat Toomey won Pennsylvania. We're like, and Trump won. And like, they refused to call Pennsylvania for Trump until when the wee hours. We're like, it's over. Like, if Toomey won, Trump won. Now, they had very different sects of people that they pulled from. But I mean, they were mirroring each other all night long. So after the 2016 election, Democrats looked at the gap between Hillary and President Trump, and they saw something very unique. They saw the Green candidate got more votes than Trump beat Hillary with. I think it was like 40,000 plurality for Trump. Green Party candidate like 79,000 votes or something like that.
I see. Right.
So
they blamed the Green Party. That was the whole blaming Jill Stein.
Right.
For drawing off votes from Hillary.
Right. Because, you know, traditionally I would agree with the assessment that, you know, probably Green Party people who vote for a Green Party candidate without a Green Party candidate are probably voting for Democrats. Much like a Libertarian or a Constitutional Party candidate without them on the ballot, you're probably voting Republican.
Right.
Doesn't mean you are, but there's probably a close
likelihood. Odds are. Right. Odds are.
So they saw that and they're like, we cannot have a Green Party candidate for President of the United States. Also, what happened is Jill Stein sued Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. She wanted paper ballots and she wanted a new post audit election process. I think Michigan like automatically kicked it out. Wisconsin, it stayed in there for a little while, kicked it out. Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf settled with her.
Settled with her.
He settled with her.
Huh.
So he settled with her in late 2018 on getting paper ballots and a post-election audit process. So 2019, he decertifies all the non-paper election machines in the Commonwealth, which was probably 60 out of 67 counties. So most of the counties, we had no election machines. He unilaterally decertifying everything. Power given to the administration through statutes.
Now so counties are like, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
And you think that why would they do that? There's got to be a political reason for that.
Right.
What is that?
Good question. So now it's, counties are like, we all have to buy machines. That's millions of dollars, you know?
Oh, wow.
Philadelphia, York, I mean, Philadelphia decertified. Yeah, they had no electronic machines. Like, that's millions of dollars. So Governor Wolf proposed in his budget to do a percent share that same year. Because remember, we had Russian collusion in the 2016 election. And it was an illegitimate election, right? We had all that. So Congress passed new laws and they added money. There was money.
Right,
so we got some federal money to help with machines. So we actually put money in a budget and put it on Governor Wolf's desk and he vetoed it. Fast forward. He vetoed it.
Why? Because he just does. He likes to veto.
He just vetoed it. He has more vetoes than any other governor in the history of the Commonwealth.
Wow.
He's a great man to work with. He vetoed it and we come back and we reach a deal. And that's where Act 77 came from. It was money for machines. It was getting rid of straight party ticket voting. And then it was mail-in voting coming into the 2020 election year.
Because prior to this time, Pennsylvania required an excuse for to vote absentee. And you didn't have early voting. It was all on election day. I always thought that, you know, this was the best system in the country.
So fast forward to 2020 and the pandemic hits. We delay the primary a few days or a few months because the unknown. And to an extent, I'm 100% convinced, actually, if we didn't do have a statute on mail-in votes, I am 100% certain Governor Wolf would have ordered a mail-only election in the primary and in the general election.
Oh, wow.
100%
convinced. Just unilaterally.
Right? Like, it is, because remember, we had the second most strict lockdowns in the entire country. There's California, and then there was Pennsylvania. We were even more strict than New York.
And Michigan?
And Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, we were number two. So, I mean, the governor bunkered in his house, Mount Wolf, which is like 5 miles from my house here in Pennsylvania. I'm just kidding. He doesn't live there anymore. He lives in Philadelphia. So he hunkered down in his multimillion-dollar apartment in Philadelphia. And he stayed there. And it was just fear. He was scared of everything. And he locked everything down. Construction. We were the only state. Like, no one's on the roads. Everybody else is cranking out construction projects. No construction projects in Pennsylvania.
Gosh.
So, but that I have no doubt, 100%, he would have just gone all mail in. It's not safe. You're not doing in person. And then we would have been in court. And, you know, our state Supreme Court's very liberal. So we have the primary election run on Act 77. We come back, we do some tweaks to it that the county has requested. And then all of a sudden, the Democrats didn't get exactly what they wanted. So they go to court, Democrat Party v. Bookvar. And Bookvar, Kathleen Bookvar, is the election voting rights advocate who is now Secretary of State. To date, she was up to that point, she was actually very easy to work with. You could call, you can have a conversation. 2020 happened. It was voting rights, typical Democrat voting rights. We're going to open the floodgates. So Democrat Party v. Bookvar, Democrats file a petition. Supreme Court takes it. It's called King's Bench. So they can just pull, instead of, it skips the appellate and pulls it up to the Supreme Court. They do a ruling where we're going to allow ballots to be counted after 8 p.m. Election day, received after up to 3 days. They get rid of all the signature verification, all the integrity requirements for mail-in ballots, gone. They're like, the law really doesn't say that, so it's gone. Do a couple other tweaks to it and just eviscerate the integrity of the entire system. All of a sudden, we see Department of State come out with guidance on drop boxes and satellite offices.
Which are nowhere in the statute.
No, they're nowhere, absolutely nowhere in the statute. And we're like, you can't do this. And blue counties did it. Red counties didn't. So you have now an unequal, non-uniform administration of elections.
Absolutely.
On top of that, and remember what I said, like, there's no verification for voter registration.
Right.
Department of State created a early in-person voting process within the mail-in ballot process. You could go to the satellite office or your elections office. You can register to vote. You can apply for an absentee ballot. You can receive an absentee ballot and vote it and hand it in simultaneously.
All at the same visit.
All at the same time. Delaware County, through their Zuckerbucks, we call it the ice cream truck. They got a truck and drove it around and did that mobily all around Delaware County.
And Delaware County, is that a Republican county?
That is a blue county who hired a former elections director from Chicago at $225,000 a year.
Oh, wow. And
yeah.
So they were using the Zuckerbucks to jack up the turnout in the blue counties.
Right. And listen, you know, the Zuckerbucks stuff, like they say, you know, it's to help with COVID and buying PPE.
No,
they bought equipment. A lot of counties bought a lot of equipment.
What kind of equipment?
Oh, mail-in voting equipment. They got the, you know,
tabulators and that kind of
thing. Tabulators, the slicers, the openers, all that kind of stuff. But most of it went out to get out the vote in the blue counties. That's right. What they used it for. Right. They were doing voter registration drives and using the election offices to do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So what else happened? Democratic Party filed suit against the presidential Green Party candidate. Now, this was September in Pennsylvania. Department of State was closed. Nobody's there working. State government still shut down in September of 2020. And, you know, at that time, you know, kind of the job of government during this is try to work with you through this very hard time, right? Mm-hmm. You would suspect, right, like, you know, help us out. We can do this. So the Green Party candidate faxed in their candidate affidavit.
Right. Because there's nobody there to deliver it to.
Right. Department of State accepted it.
Right.
Democrat Party sued because the law required a wet signature and it wasn't a wet signature.
Oh, my gosh.
Supreme Court kicked them. Now, you would think some of these minor parties, they're probably doing presidential election. We had three statewide row officers. We had Attorney General, Auditor General, and Treasurer on the ballot as well. All three of those Green Party candidates were still on the ballot.
But they only kicked off the presidential.
Right. And I would assume they're probably all doing their petitions together. So they all probably faxed in their petitions. But they just want to make sure that Green Party wasn't there because they knew from 2016. So you have no Green Party candidate through the court kicking them off on, I would say, a complete BS lawsuit. I mean, like, you allow all this other access. You allow Dropboxes, satellite, you allow all this other stuff to help people, but you're going to throw a little hissy fit over a fax and affidavit during COVID and nobody's at Department of State. So you have Green Party kicked off. You have new voting laws. You have the Department of State just creating their own voting laws, voting rules left and right. You have Department of State demanding counties hand over. So the ballots that are coming in that are uncounted or like don't have signatures, don't have inner secrecy envelopes. Department of State sends an email to counties election night saying, any voter who turns stuff in and you're going to kick them off, go tell the parties that this is happening so they can go inform the people.
The political parties. Go tell the political parties, not the voters.
Go tell the political parties that this is happening so they can contact voters. This all transpired. Dropboxes, none of them had security. There's no security on any of those Dropboxes. So you could just, this happened in the, eventually counties got video on these things. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, it's video. It doesn't prevent anything happening.
No, it just records it afterwards, what's happening.
Right?
Right.
So one county commissioner did a right to know request on the video from the 2021 primary election. And it shows a guy walking into the county, like the county foyer, right, where this Dropbox is, bag of ballots, starts shoving them in.
Oh, my gosh.
But here's the problem. Once those ballots are in,
you don't know. There's no way to separate them.
It's all commingled. Right. That's so, right. You know, it was a complete manipulation. And that's all fraudulent. Pennsylvania law, you're not allowed to do ballot trap. And then one ballot for one person.
Right.
Even our fearless Governor Wolf had his wife illegally hand in his ballot. Admitted it. Had no idea. No idea he committed a crime in the 2020. Was it primary election or general election? I think it was the primary election. He was on KDAK radio out west and they're talking about it. Like, did you vote? He's like, oh, I gave my wife my ballot and she went to vote for me. I'm like, yep, we're cool.
Illegal.
Thanks for reading the law there, Governor. And it's something he signed into law. Like, that's right. Something he signed into law. So that's what we've been dealing with. And you can just continue to see it. You know, there's continuing to be problems. We just had a court case. We had to, the 2021 primary election. Mm-hmm. We had to threaten to impeach the three election board members because they wanted, or two out of the three, they wanted to illegally count undated ballots, which was against the law.
Right.
They ended up backing down, so we didn't. And then we just had Lehigh County do it, all three. Two Democrat, one Republican. Election board members illegally wanted to count these ballots. We just had actually the Supreme Court just reaffirmed the Commonwealth Appellate Court saying you can't count those. So we're probably going to have to go back and impeach them for illegally voting to break the law. But this is what's happening. It's rogue counties. It's 67 counties doing 67 things. And we have, and it's funny, like Republican counties, you talk to elections directors during these hearings and we're like, you know, did you do a Dropbox? You know, Forrest Whitaker, Lycoming County, awesome guy. No, that's illegal. It's not in the code.
Right.
We're not doing that.
Right.
And then
so
you got
right.
And you got other ones like, oh, Department of State has guidance, which is optional, saying, oh, you can do it. But it's not
which
in
is, the, which so. Is completely outside the right. statute.
And then you have the blue counties still doing early in-person voting, and red counties are like, that's not in the law. We're not doing it. So
wow, it's really interesting. It's a real divide in terms of respect for the rule of law. Mm-hmm. But so tell us about what you ended up proposing in 2021 that came out of all, you did all these research and studies and hearings. And so what was it that you proposed?
Yeah, so it was funny internally, like staff's like, oh, what's the four things you want to fix? I'm like, four? I'm like, I didn't do 10 hearings to do four fixes here, people. So I'm like, get a pen and paper. We'll start going through this. And I did bring the committee together probably February. We spent 6 hours going through where we think we want to go with stuff. And we went voter registration. We said, all right, here's voter registration. What do you guys want to do? Bah, 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 bah. Mail-in voting. Wow. What do you guys want to do? Elections. We spent probably the most amount of time on elections or on the post-audit process, because we learned that we really don't have one.
Right. Most states do not. Most states.
Don't.
One of the things we've all learned after 2020 is that there's nobody that goes back and audits to see if the law was followed and what happened.
Yeah. And even the elections directors, when we hit that topic, they're like, we need help.
Really? Good.
Yeah, they're like, they basically said, this is pointless. There's no uniformity. It's 2% of ballots or up to 2,000 ballots.
Yeah.
So, you know, Philadelphia's 100,000 million ballots, take 2,000. What's that
show
you?
That's nothing. That tells you nothing. Is that one of those risk limiting audits that the left
That's not even, like? That wasn't even a risk limiting. That was sample, like just take a sample.
Yeah,
and they were like, and we really don't know if it's 2% of all election, like of all elections.
Yeah, that's
is it
right.
just like 2% of one? It like, is it 2% of every precinct?
Yeah,
we don't know. And we don't have any clearance. The other thing that we found out, because at the end of the election, before certification, they're supposed to do this, the audit, right? Before they certify. So after certification, I called Department of State. I'm like, hey, can I get those audits the counties do? Before they certify, because I assumed when the counties did their certification, sent it to Department of State, so Department of State could certify, they would send those audits up, so the Department of State could look at them and say, okay, we agree with your certification. They're like, we don't get those. I'm like,
you don't get them now or ever?
Ever? They're like, no, we've never gotten them. I'm like, what happens with them? I don't know.
Oh, wow.
So when we got to, we asked, like, what do you do with these? Like, well, there's no real template. We do them. Like, I guess we could send you them, but nobody ever asked for them. There's no template. We just kind of do them.
And they serve no purpose.
Right. So we're just like, we got to redo this whole thing. And, you know, our speaker introduced like this risk limiting audit bill, and they're like, you should do this. I'm like, we're not there. So we went back and said, number one, we can't have, and the thing with audits, there's two important things from audits. One is an independent review, and you're free of conflicts. Those are the two most important thing of an audit, because when you get it back, you want somebody, third party, whoever, to validate that the information you're receiving is accurate, right?
And you're talking about any kind of audit,
right,
an audit
right.
of a bank, an audit of right. a financial statement, an audit right. of a nonprofit, a company.
Right. The funny part is, I explain it this way. If how we do election audits is how we do every audit, when the IRS says you owe them money, you can do your own audit and tell them, no, you owe me money.
Right.
That's
how we do it now, right? With election audits.
But that's how election audits do. Not that they're cheating, not that they're bad people, but you're
it's
auditing
just a double
yourself.
Check. Trust but verify.
Right. You're auditing yourself. So we're like, all right, so who can we have do these audits? We're like, oh, we have a statewide auditor general.
There you go.
Guess what? So I call him up. I'm like, so here's what we would like you to start auditing election wise. How much money do you need? Because you like one policy thing, you cannot have people do something that you don't fund, because it's not going to get done.
That's
so they're like, so we had a meeting, we walked through stuff, and they're like, probably hair is getting pulled out because this is, it's a big project, 67 audits. They're like, we need $3.1 million. I'm like, okay. They're like, really? I'm like, yes, we will give you $3.1 million to do this. This is a major initiative. Right. I'll go to leadership. You're good. So we go to leadership. We're like, here's our plan. We want the auditor general to do audits based on governmental audit standings. You know, you got the green book sitting over there, GAO. That's your standards. We want a full performance audit of the entire system. And we want the result confirming stuff as well. Because we want a full picture of what transpired throughout that entire process. Because number one, if there is a small problem now and we catch it, it will not become a bigger problem later.
That's right.
Two, we want uniformity in the system. So how do you get uniformity in the system? Number one, you need a standard. You need to train to that standard, and then you need to audit to that standard.
That's great.
We don't have any of that.
We have none of that now.
So we had to rebuild it. So we had to have an entity create a standard manual for all the election processes outside the Department of State, because we just don't trust them to do anything anymore. We provide free training to everybody that needs trained under that. We will pay for that at the state level. And then we're going to do the audit. And if you have audit findings, you're not getting your money. And the way we did money is based on a reimbursement. So you're not going to get it up front. You spend your money if you want a state reimbursement, which is significant. We made it worthwhile. And you have an audit finding, you're not going to get your money. So we make sure there's integrity in, within that entire process to make
and
sure
we're
doing it.
And incentives to do it right.
Right. So it's a big deal. You know, on top of that, we have voter ID. We have voter registration requirements. Like, you have to validate. We push back deadlines so they can start meeting those deadlines. I mean, my big thing is we're sending ballots out without voter registration being locked down.
Right.
That's a problem to me.
That's a big problem.
Right. So we make sure like no ballots are released until that voter registration is locked out. Now, outside of obviously federal overseas and military, that's all federal guidance. So it is what it is. So we redid the entire process from start to finish. A lot of we joke, like I got election law from 1937 that has King's language. And like the funniest thing to me is counties are still required to give each polling precinct a gas lantern.
Oh my gosh. That's in the current election code.
Yeah, it's in the code.
Wow.
So
that's the last time anybody looked at that tells us how long it's been.
Right.
Since any overhaul of the election code has been done.
Right. So, yeah, we try to do with every single problem compartment, deal with it. How do we deal with, we have a lot of nursing homes in Pennsylvania. How do we deal with nursing homes voted? We started getting calls of, you know, I visited mom in the dementia ward. She's talking about voting for Biden. She's been a Republican and has never liked Democrats ever.
Right.
So, we pulled some Florida statute and have the election offices go in with bipartisan teams and do the canvassing for elections in there. So you don't have an entity walk in and start getting ballots and having people vote for them and stuff. And two, very important, training nursing home administrators, because they may not be aware of the law and they normally hand elections off to the activities director.
Right.
They could be at fault for election law violations. So we make sure that training happens too.
So you introduced this bill, HB, what, 1300?
1300, yep.
And so when was that introduced, May or June?
Yeah, it was probably late May we introduced it. And, you know, we after we introduced it, I had everybody that testified from counties to the department, like everybody, I had them on a group call. Kind of went through everything we were looking at doing, got some feedback, sent it to the counties, got some feedback from the counties, ran it the next week, had a pretty extensive amending stuff. And all this time we're trying to work with the governor because, you know, we have one of the most liberal governors in America. And we're like, we got bad elections. We need to fix this. And, you know, when we launched it, it was the prototypical, you know, Republican insurrection,
voter suppression, denying people's rights.
You're horrible people. How dare you? Blah, blah, blah. So, you know, we're battling through that. And I still remember that, like, timing, like, we God was looking out for us this entire process. I gotta say, the Friday before our vote, he had a press conference in Delaware County to whip up support against this heading into the weekend.
Oh, the governor did?
The governor did. So me and my two Republican colleagues decided we're going to go
and say hi to the governor. Press conference.
To his press conference. Like that week I sent him a letter like, governor, we have this bill. Let's negotiate it. Let's sit down and have a discussion. You want stuff. We want stuff. Counties want stuff. Voters want stuff.
Right.
People want changes. Let's go. Let's sit down and figure out a middle ground with this stuff. So we go and we're walking in and I'm like, well, you know, security's there, police, whole nine yards. I'm like, guys, we'll just go as far as we can until they stop us. Just pretend you should be there. Right. We're just house members. So we come strutting in, we get past security checkpoint one, we get up to where it's at, say hi to all the police, thank for their service. And then we get to the governor's staff. And we have our house pins on. Oh, representatives, thanks for coming. Come on in. We're like, yeah, we're in. So we're in. And then you can hear on the hallway, like, talk like, who's here? Who let them in? Like, so he comes in, says, you know, Seth, good to see you. We shake hands. He's like, oh, I did you get my response to your letter? And the letter was, let's sit and talk. Let's right. sit and negotiate this. I'm like, I didn't. He's like, well, it's probably in the mail. You'll get it. So he gets up. Gives his speech, and you know, having like Republicans there looking at you is a different press conference than not. So, you know, tone's a little different. You could see some uneasiness in some House and Senate members and like Delaware City Council and like the nonpartisan Delaware elections directors there. Everything was a little more docile. And this is liberal media press from Philadelphia. Right. These are not conservatives. They don't question Philadelphia Inquirer. Governor, yeah. Representative Grove standing right here. Will you be actually sitting down and negotiating a bill with him so we can get election reforms done?
This was the reporter's question.
First one out the gate.
Wow.
Next reporter goes, governor, like they like again, Representative Grove's right here. Obviously, they want voter ID. They have this new provision of where they're enhancing voter registration cards and making that an ID. What's your problem with that? He goes, I just don't like it.
I just don't like it.
So takes a few questions. They cut it off because he's just getting spanked. Like they
by
are just
the
destroying
media. That's just shocking.
By the media.
That never happens.
The second he's done, every camera goes, mics in our faces. They're like, what do you think about the governor's press conference? Like we did our own press conference. The entire news media story throughout the weekend was, you'll never believe what the Republicans did. On top of that, Friday, Franklin and Marshall College released an election poll.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a call from Charles Thomas. He's a writer for Penn Live, Patriot News, which is Harrisburg. He's like, have you seen this F&M poll on elections? I'm like, no, I'm like, this is going to be bad. We got to vote. It's going to be horrible. So I call him. I'm like, all right, you give me the damage. He's like, well, you know, F&M just did a poll and it's coming back 71% support for voter ID and 68% support for secure drop boxes and signature verification. And I'm like, wait, because F&M is known as like they have college kids do this. So they're not known as like right-leaning pollsters. I'm like, you're telling me an F&M poll days before we're doing a vote is coming back with 71% support of Pennsylvanians for voter ID? He's like, yes. I'm like,
wow.
Yeah, it was perfect. So, you know, riding in on that, hot, you know, you hit the floor, Pennsylvanians, 71% of Pennsylvanians want this. And I think there was a Monmouth national poll that hit that Monday too on top of that. So it worked out. So we get the bill done, passes the House, passes the Senate, gets to the governor's desk. That thing was vetoed in 5 seconds. Vetoes it.
Because I just don't like it.
Right. I just don't like it.
Wow.
2 weeks later, a reporter for Philadelphia Inquirer calls me, Jonathan Lye. He goes, or he texts me. He goes, you need to call me. as soon as possible. We need to talk. I'm like, oh God. So I call him. He's like, you know how I told you I did an interview with Governor Wolf? I'm like, yeah, I know. He's like, I did the interview. I'm like, oh, how'd it go? He's like, let me read you this. I just need to get your response. I asked him about voter ID and he responded, he's okay with it.
He's okay with it?
He's okay.
He's gone from, I just don't like it to I'm okay with it.
Yeah. He's like, well, Stacey Abrams and, you know, she seems okay with it. So maybe it's something we can do. I'm open to discussing it. Goodness. I'm like, that was like the reason for vetoing that. Like, that was the number one reason. And like, at that point, we were done. We were just going to go, we'll just do a constitutional amendment, be done with it. We won't open. So I'm like, okay. Then he goes, he's like, I want to read you two other points of kind of why he vetoed the bill. I'm like, okay. He's like, one, he doesn't like the provision that requires a voter to put a copy of your driver's license with the ballot for mail-in absentee ballots. He doesn't like that provision. I'm like, that wasn't in the bill. And the reporter goes, I know it's not in the bill. I'm like, did you tell him it's not in the bill? He's like, I did tell him it's not in the bill. What was his response? He just doesn't like it. I'm like, but it wasn't in the bill.
Grief.
Right.
You just can't make this up, Seth.
I know. So then he goes, well, I really would have liked to see an affidavit for the voter ID, kind of like what they do in Delaware. And Jonathan Lott goes, Governor, that was in the bill.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. I'm like, the governor really said this. He's like, yeah. So they never read the bill. Never read it. Didn't read it.
So fast forward.
Yeah.
So he vetoed the bill. I know you had thought that there was an opportunity at various points last year that maybe you could bring it back or break it up, but that obviously didn't happen. So tell us about 2022. And does it have to be reintroduced in a different form, or does it carry over? And what could people do to help? If we wanted to try to get people to help, what should we do?
Yeah. Get a new governor in 2022. That'd be very helpful.
Yeah.
That's coming. So I did, after the governor said he's open to discussions around voter identification, I did end up reintroducing the bill. And I reintroduced it and I sunshined for a voting meeting. We're talking summertime. We weren't in session. So the week we got back into session, I think it was September 27th, I sunshined a voting meeting that day. And I said, we're voting this bill September 27th. I hope the governor will sit down with us this summer and we can hammer out an agreement and be done with it.
And maybe he'll read it.
Maybe he'll read it this time, which would be good. September 27th came back. Governor's office never contacted us. So we ran it out and they're like, why would you run it out? I'm like, because I said we're running it out on September 27th. I'm like, we should sit down and discuss this. Like, I don't know why they don't think we mean what we mean. Like, we want to sit down and have a discussion. So we move it. We were going to sit it there until we get some agreements so we can amend it on the floor. Then the 2022 or the 2021 general election happened and it was a fiasco.
The 2021 election was a fiasco.
Yeah. We had Montgomery County, one of our largest counties, they misprinted 20,000 ballots. Berks County, who has a high Hispanic population, screwed up the dates on the Hispanic ballots heading out, like not on the Spanish language stuff, on the dates, which is like a 7, like they screwed up the dates.
Now that could be considered voter suppression.
Right. But nobody filed a lawsuit. It was weird. Right.
Right.
Those 20,000 ballots that got screwed up in Montgomery County sequestered them when they came back in to verify them. Election night, they never kind of disclosed the 20,000 were sitting there. So you had all these people think they won election with 20,000 votes sitting there that nobody knew about, not even the press. Like that morning, they had front pages of school board members winning, people congratulating. Those 20,000 ballots then got loaded that morning, which completely changed the outcome of the election. You had Republicans winning election night to losing the day after the election.
That's interesting.
So we had, and it was unique because Virginia was popular then. And watching Virginia, it was really cool because at one point they're like, oh, yeah, all those mail-in votes need counted by 9 p.m. I'm like, ooh, that state has hard deadlines for counting. Mm-hmm. That would fix what just transpired. So we did an amendment on the floor to put hard deadlines. Any mail-in absentee ballots that are received prior to election day must be counted by 9 p.m. along with the in-person election stuff. 9 p.m., you're done.
That's good.
Anything received election day has to be counted by 2 a.m. Done. Because if we're going to allow you to do pre-canvassing and all this stuff, you should have your counts done in a timely fashion. So that was one of the big ads we had from that election. And it happens all the time. We constantly see new stuff pop up. Like, God, like we constantly have to go back and tinker. So we have that. We've moved some other bills out of committee. We have a Zuckerbuck ban, which is now in the Senate. We have a bill that allows any Pennsylvanian to be an observer from anywhere in Pennsylvania.
That's really important. Really good.
So we might be loading a couple other ballot harvesting and some other stuff. So we're trickling some stuff out little by little. So people get engaged. Call your legislator. Please call your legislator. Demand election integrity. Make sure it's in the forefront of our plate. We will still work at it. And I don't care if you have a Republican, Democrat, whoever. Call your House member. Call your senator. If they're voting for it, thank them. Say thank you so much for your leadership. If they're not, tell them they need to get in the game and make sure your vote is secure and do everything they can to do that because it's critically important. And then get involved. Create an integrity team locally. Figure out what's happening locally at your voting precinct, at your county, and hold them accountable. Get engaged. That's the biggest thing anybody can do.
Well, you know, because we've talked about this before and you've seen our Citizen's Guide to Building Election Integrity Infrastructure. And I really do think that if we had citizens groups in every county watching, going to meetings, being there all the time, that made such a difference in Virginia. Oh my gosh, the number of things that they just saw happening or not happening and were able to call attention to it and get them fixed before voting ever started. Mm-hmm. It was hugely important. So, well, look, I mean, Seth, you're a real hero and you're a real role model. And the work that you've done is hugely important to people even in other states, not just in Pennsylvania, but in other states. So you've really been an inspiration. You certainly, I've learned a lot from you about audits, and that was certainly even before the Arizona audit. And I have now become a Seth Grove acolyte on the audit issue. I would like to publish. Did you publish those new standards or is that in the bill to be done if you get the audit?
Yeah, that's in the bill. I actually can send you just those parts because you need an entire reporting system, right?
Right.
People file election complaints all the time.
Yep.
A lot of it's behind closed doors. What happens to them? And there's some frustration with the electorate around there. Like, I reported this. What was the outcome of that? You need to make sure someone's looking at it.
That's right.
It's adjudicated, whether it is a internal problem at a county or a precinct that needs addressed. Could be election fraud, needs prosecuted. At the end of the day, someone needs to come up with a report to look at all these statewide problems so policymakers in the General Assembly and the general public and counties can go back and say, what were the problems? These were problems we saw throughout the state that the General Assembly should impact, or here's problems in our county that we as citizens of the county need to make sure our county officials are fixing, or county officials see and say, you have a problem. We need to fix this moving forward.
Well,
that should be all part of that audit compliance review process.
It's all about transparency
it is.
And accountability. Mm-hmm. And so Well, Seth, you are a true hero, and I really can't tell you how much we appreciate your being with us today. And actually, I will post some of, we'll talk about some things. We'll post some of this on our website so people can download it, take it to their legislators in their states. And if you're from Pennsylvania and you're listening, you need to be engaged in helping get these things done. And so with that, I want to thank you so much for being with us. We want to help you, and we want to spread the word about how to really overhaul election codes that need to be fixed. So,
amen.
So thanks so much for all you do.
Thanks, Beta. Thanks for everything you do.
You're amazing. Thank you. And thank you to our audience for listening and watching. We hope you'll join us for another episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. We need to reclaim our elections, and we'll do it eventually as long as we have good, strong public servants like Seth Grove. So with that, thank you so much, and I bid you adieu.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter. Become part of the Election Integrity Network.